Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Just around 5 minutes have passed for us. A week's passed for the rest of the world. I might be with child. I have no idea.
You might do. I'm still on the first glass of wine. I've only had half of it. Got too engrossed in the conversation.
That's a tumbler, that.
All that great. I suppose.
That's a half pint.
Is it? You reckon?
I remember on a night out, I had a... you know when you're a student and someone offers you some sort of drink-based cocktail dare?
Yeah.
And you just go, yeah, because that's what I'm supposed to be doing, apparently, because I'm a student.
Yeah, I'll drink it out of a shoe.
Okay. Just watch for the shoe. Tony Storm, AEW reference. But I had a pint of whiskey and wine, and it did me right in, as you do a little face.
Whiskey and wine?
Yeah, I just thought, oh, it'll be funny, I'll just drink everything, and then I don't remember the rest of the night, but there's so many photos of just a zombified me being carried from club to club.
One of the first times I started drinking when I was a bit younger and I didn't understand what, like, measures were, we decided, we thought we'd be a little bit sophisticated and have what we called a scotch night, where we all got dressed up in, not suits, because we were kids, we couldn't afford suits, but we dressed up in ties and smart shirts, and went around our pal's house, managed to get some scotch somehow. I can't remember how we acquired that, but we didn't know what the measures were, so we were drinking literal pints of it, and that is the most blackout
I've ever been. Right.
I couldn't drink anything that smelled even remotely like that for years and years and years. It set me up dreadfully.
You've definitely, like, as a kid, or teen rather, or early 20s or whatever, you don't need... But you end up finding your limits.
Yeah.
Just being like, I don't want to be that again.
You know what? That's it, right? You get your limit and you're like, nah, never beyond that. Mm-hmm. I was in a lovely corner shop when I was in university, and I was buying some pre-drinks. Mm. And the old, lovely old lady behind the counter said, you know what goes really well with whiskey? And I was like, what? She went, Iron Brew. And I thought that sounded insane. But then I thought,
she's an experienced
woman. Why not? Yeah, she's got the experience behind her. She's probably got good taste. Mm-hmm. I'll get it. And I mixed it. Yeah, it was magnificent. It was the best night of my life, that, I think.
What magnificent.
What a taste sensation.
Speaking of things that are magnificent, this is part two of the off-topic up, wind-up.
Wind-up.
Wind the topics up.
We need a better
let them go
for that. Absolutely. If you listened to last week, you'll know that it's a little bit of a celebration episode as we're recording this just before Scott goes to work from home
while creates
he's
life
waiting for his baby. It has been a crazy 3 months, my friend.
Yep.
You are becoming a dad. I am still here and back at work. So we're having a little bit of a celebration, and we're starting, man. Funnily enough, we talked about drink there, but we're talking about strange food to kick us off, because your friend and mine, Ash Millman, has got in touch to ask best way to cook an egg.
Oh, God. Well, the other day, I tried to do a thing. You know when you get those, like, also, hi, Ash, you get those little circular molds.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to make, this is such a specific thing. There's a chain near us that does a thing called, the chain's called Pablo Eggs Go Bow.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's amazing. But they do little fold over small bits of egg. And I just wanted to make one at the house, but I was like, how do I make an egg small? I couldn't, because it'll splat big. And so I got a ring mold and I put it in there, and then the ring mold got stuck to the pan, and it was a whole thing. And I had to, like, flip it over, but it was beautiful because it still came out as, like, a nice fried egg. It just looked like a weird yellow white slop.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I love eggs. Because I kind of just kept, ate that thinking like, well, that's still delicious. And there's no technique in that at all.
No.
So I think it's a trick question and there's no wrong way to cook an egg.
I love
scrambled egg.
I think you're right. You know what? I mentioned my strange relationship with food, sometimes fractured relationship with food in the last episode. I didn't have an egg until I was 19. Like, it took me 19 years before I even tried an egg.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
And literally, what it says in the tin.
You didn't do no egg and soldiers?
No egg and soldiers. Maybe
why not?
I was like very, very little. Right. But before, as soon as I got cognitive abilities, no eggs for JB.
Why not?
I just thought that they looked wrong, you know? It just didn't look right.
I like the Dylan Moran thing that they're just farts clothed in substance, which is
no,
fair enough.
No, you're going to put me off them again. No more eggs for 90 years.
I will shout out that, like, I love frying an egg. I think that I love a good omelette as well. I love a good French omelette.
I'm a scrambled egg fiend, I must admit. I like all eggs now, thankfully. My girlfriend was like, you need to try an egg.
And I'm so... Like, oh, every day.
I know.
I'm glad you're with her.
There's always something. Yeah, I know. So
every
am I.
Day.
Yeah, I'd be eggless.
I feel like I need to set up like a little chat and be like, has he done? And she goes, yeah. And I go, okay. Okay, good. Okay, I can sleep now.
My entire personality is just grafted off her. She's introduced me to all the good stuff. I'm a scrambled egg fiend. It's pretty much all I ate when I was off last year.
Right.
Scrambled eggs and spinach. What a delectable combination.
I would have put a bit of ketchup on there.
I'm not a ketchup and egg fan.
Really?
Yeah, I like the yolk. I know a lot of people don't, but... Yeah. Like, you can get egg whites, can't you?
You can. I mean, you can do lots of more, like, airy stuff. Like, I love the way, when we were in Japan, like, the way that they do a lot of their dairy stuff is a lot more eggy. It was a very eggy cheesecake that we had that was very highly recommended, but it just tasted like one giant foamy egg, which some people are into, entire nations into, but
exactly.
Not for me.
Well, sorry, Ash, we spent too long on that, so we're going to move on to...
Not enough, to be honest. Egg chat.
We've got your friend of mine again, Adam Strawn, who asks this
is the All-Stars.
The first part of this question episode is the All-Stars.
Yeah.
There's even more to come. Adam Strawn asks, what do you go to Greg's Orders? Greg's, by the way, being the very best food place you can go to in the United Kingdom.
I genuinely have Northeast Geordie pride for Greg's because they're born out of the Northeast of England. And as much as their prices have gone up and they're accused of being a bit more Tory these days, they still satisfy for the most part.
But what satisfies the most?
Well, that's the thing. I used to always go with the sausage and bean melt. And then when they made that, the sausage and bean and cheese melt, that was next level. That was a third stage evolution to put it in Pokemon terms. And so for the most part, I used to go to Greg's and get a chicken bake and a sausage, bean and cheese melt and just have the two of them, not on top of each other, not insane, but just that with a bag of crisps. But because it's pastry, I would feel horrible afterwards.
I know what you mean. Like, the older I get,
it sits on you.
Yeah, the less pastry I can eat. I used to be able to smash, again, when I was on my very first date with my current girlfriend, by the way. I was skint at the time. I had no money, right? I used all my money on the bus down to Newcastle. And we went to see the Great Gatsby or the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Nice.
Anyway, the point was all my money went on that cinema ticket.
Right.
So I didn't have any left over for food afterwards, but I was starving. All I could afford were the pack of four sausage rolls for Greg's.
That's great.
I have a core memory of sitting in the bus station waiting for our bus. Like, one of the first times I met her, and I'm inhaling all four of these sausage rolls.
You know, not to share.
Oh, no, all four for me.
What do you mean?
She'd had her tea. She went to KFC or something.
She went to an egg place.
She went to an egg place. She had something way better, but I was just... I was that kind of hungry where you're getting angry. You're getting like your brain's got fog in it. You're just thinking,
hungry.
I need to get some food in me. And it was four sausage rolls.
I can just see you trying to put all four of them in your mouth at once
You mean Greg's pastry is flaky in the best possible way, but it meant afterwards out. I stunk.
You look like Thanos has tried to half snap you away.
Literally, yeah. Literally, exactly that. But sausage roll is still my go-to Greg's order.
I find the sausage roll to be quite overrated.
I don't know.
I like it a lot, but I'm not going to go there and get that. Like, if that's the last thing they have on the menu, I'll get it, but I'll get anything else other than that.
This
is very greasy.
You know what? This wasn't intentional, but that's us summed up, I think. That's the first thing I would get. Though, I must admit, you did introduce me to, like you were saying, the sausage, bean, and cheese melt.
The first time
last year. And that changed my life.
Because of me, that's the one you
got.
Yeah,
you got it once, and I was like, that sounds incredible.
Yeah, you love beans as well.
I know.
Yeah.
Now it's one of my favorites. Top two from Greg's.
The sausage roll is the Mario of Greg's, the Mario Kart, where it's just the milk toast thing you could do, the vanilla ice cream of the menu.
Well, this is
the lost leader.
A really, really bad time to say that. Every time I play Mario Kart, I choose Mario, and vanilla ice cream is my favorite.
Yeah, I'm fully aware of both these things, and I have to live with them every day.
I do like a bit of mint. We've got another all-star couple of questions, and we're going to return to her later on. But Amy Rapier has gotten in touch saying...
This is literally, we're bringing the whole universe together.
This wasn't intention. I didn't go chase them all down. This is of their own volition.
Shout out to Amy Rapier, one of the finest editors we've ever had.
Hell yeah, man. She says, rank these Easter egg flavors, classic Dairy Milk, Ferrero Rocher, Dime? I don't even think I've had a Dime. I've seen a Dime. Milky Bar and Maltesers.
Oh, God.
For me, it's Maltesers number one, Classic Dairy Milk 2, Milky Bar after that, Ferrero Rocher, and then Dime, because I never had Dime.
That's the thing. I'm sure they changed the way it was spelt. I swear when I was a child, it was D-I-M-E, unless I just said it as Dime. And then now it's like this weird Dame thing.
I have no idea what it is.
Dime.
Sorry, Amy.
I don't even know. I love a good Dime, though, so I'll say Dime number one. The thing is, the interesting part of this is the texture we're talking about, because are we thinking these are all in Easter egg shape? Or are we ranking chocolate?
No, they're all in Easter egg shape, but you have to bear in mind that you'll get a few of their individual chocolates along with it. So you're buying the Easter egg package where you're getting the egg and you're getting a few, you know, a bar of Dairy Milk.
Solid chocolate, I don't mind it, but I don't want it. Like, I want a crunchy, I want a Malteser,
I did not expect
this. It's the sausage roll of chocolate.
Second podcast to be the one where we disagree the most. Like, I don't know how this has come out of nowhere.
I mean, this is our waking life every day.
It really is.
Dragon's Dogma 2.
I'm not a hard chocolate fan.
I don't mind it. Like I said, I don't mind it, but I'm not choosing it over other stuff.
We had this conversation the other day because it's all we talk about. I put my chocolate in the fridge. I'm a fridge chocolate guy.
You're insane.
Don't put anything else in the fridge.
But it's
empty.
When you get the chocolate out of the fridge, because I've never asked this of a chocolate fridge person, but when you have
chocolate
fridgy, when you have that, are you putting it back in the fridge when it warms up again? Are you it's not good?
Oh, without a doubt,
you're stopping eating to put it back in the fridge?
Yes. I mean,
Sweet Jesus.
I don't have a temperature gun, and I'm not like holding that at it. And when it goes below a certain temperature, I'm not saying I'm done.
But sir, put down your temperature gun.
Once it gets too mushy, once it gets too, it's coming off of my hands and stuff, I like it in the fridge. I really do.
He likes it in the fridge?
I really do.
I don't know. If I'm ranking, the thing I was going to say was that all chocolate tastes better when it's in egg shape, when it's thinner.
Yeah.
And that's what, that would be the crux of that philosophy would be against the thick chocolate.
I'm with you there. I'm a big crap chocolate fan. Like, I love the taste of Easter eggs, even though they're kind of crap chocolate.
What do you mean when it's not, like, it's like a weird third party called, like, Kidberries or something?
Yes, exactly. Right. And I like the own brand stuff put out. There's something basic about it that I just love. I don't need the fancy... You know me, I don't need the fancy stuff.
I'm not saying
I don't
either.
I don't need toppings on it.
I'm not either, but I've had too many off-brand stuff over the years that I quite like when it's an actual company.
No, I get that.
These days. I forget the ranking that was, but the Ferrero Rocher one, when they make the egg, you get Ferrero Rocher chocolate as the egg. It's not standard. It's got little bits in.
Bit too posh for me, that, to be
honest. It's nice, though.
Yeah, my dad likes them a lot.
Yeah. I like it.
You know what's interesting?
You got to treat yourself.
I put the tweet out, and I mentioned Easter eggs in it because it was Easter over the weekend.
I was going to say, this is probably going to go out in like May or something.
Oh, yeah, but it's just hot chocolate, isn't it? Everyone likes chocolate. But what's even more interesting and more alienating to the audience, I don't think America has Easter eggs.
I saw this tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was getting responses from people who were talking about literal Easter eggs in video games and stuff, and I thought, did I not make it clear?
Well,
if you don't have Easter eggs, you're probably thinking, what are you talking about?
I saw your friend of mine, Stone Cold Steve Austin, receive a set of Easter eggs in his Jeep truck thing at his ranch.
Yeah.
And so they have some form of Easter eggs, but the one we have big chocolate Easter eggs.
Yeah.
I think they just have actual, because you make those pasty eggs as well. I don't know if you've ever, those like pasty eggs where you wrap tissue in them and you paste them.
No, not really.
I did them.
No, that's
did a lot of them.
That's kind of blowing my mind.
If anyone searches pasty egg, you'll see that.
I just thought America would have been all over these.
Yeah, you know, it is like a big chocolate product.
I would have assumed that it would have been an American import that we got from there, but I guess not.
It is a weird pivot, a weird journey from like dead messiah to chocolate.
It is, isn't
but
it? Yeah, bunnies. I don't know.
Was Easter bunny?
I was raised Catholic, and I don't even understand the connection between that. Anyway, in a similar question, we'll get back to Amy's second one in a bit, but
okay.
Keep on that theme. Ali asks, I have to ask, what is the best Easter themed chocolate? Cream eggs or mini eggs? Mini eggs.
Mini eggs all the way.
We agree.
Mini eggs and those Fox's iced biscuits are on a world of their own. On an island of their own.
Like they're
sort
of
hyper-coloured and very sugary and just, it's what I want.
Yeah.
What I want for my life.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
Amy's final question is, one, best Guinness you've ever drank? And two, what other podcasts do you like listening to? One gaming-related, one not.
Best Guinness was the one that I poured myself in Ireland. Everyone, it's almost like a running meme thing that, like, Guinness in Ireland tastes better, which I'll stand by that. I drank a stupid amount of Guinness in Ireland. But yeah, definitely the one that I poured myself in the Guinness factory. I was lucky enough to go do the tour thing, and they teach you about how to pour the perfect pint, and there's a whole thing about the angle and the smells and everything else. And that, because then you pour yourself one at the very end and you get to keep it, and you drink it. But like, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And it was just, there's something about the Guinness in Ireland I just found to be so much more smoother and a bit colder. Mm. And it just kind of had like, it was just so refreshing every single time.
Yeah, everyone hyped it up for me when I went to Dublin earlier this month. And it certainly was nice, don't get me wrong. But maybe I just don't have the palate. I'm not a big Guinness drinker in England anyway, so I couldn't pick them out of a lineup, probably. Maybe if they were really close together, but still really enjoyed it. And yeah, I would agree. The best Guinness I've ever drank is the one that had my face printed on it.
Yeah, it did.
So I'm going to have to go for that. It's hilarious, by the way, how many people do that tour and pull their own pint or get their face on the form of the Guinness and just don't drink it. Just get there. Yeah, look at it. Get the photo for Instagram and then just leave full pints.
Oh, what?
I was mind sweeping everyone, just knocking them back.
Just drinking faces left, right and center.
Absolutely.
The gaming podcast stuff... for the most part, it's Nextlander, who are the people who used to form Giant Bomb with Jeff Gerstmann, who themselves were ex-GameSpot people. And then when Giant Bomb fell apart, they fractured. And you've got the Jeff Gerstmann Show, I think it's called, which is a solo show. He sometimes has guests on as one podcast. And then Nextlander is the remaining people. It's Vinny Caravella, Brad Shoemaker, Alex Navarro, people who, in theory, people will know from the GameSpot days or the Giant Bomb days. Yeah, those two for the most part. And then occasionally kind of funny, but hardly ever. These days,
right,
used to be a lot more, but yeah, and then stuff like Play Watch Listen, like I really like Alana Pierce, Troy Baker, Mike Bithell, and Austin Walker. His podcast.
Oh, I was going to say Butler, but obviously it's not.
I think it is Austin Walker.
Austin Butler's Austin. He's Elvis.
He's like phenomenal as well. I'm forgetting his surname. Right. But yeah, one of the best composers in the game. But I like the variety of opinions that they have and the insight they have into the industry. I'm blanking on the rest of it. But yeah, definitely those three.
Well, what about non-podcasts?
Is that what the question
podcasts?
Was? I'm going on about gaming podcasts.
No, one game and one non.
Oh, the thing that I've realized, one of the many things I've realized in prepping for the child and thinking about how I spend my time on this earth is that I am 110% video game built.
Like,
I might swim a couple of times a week. I'll play guitar in between when the food's cooking. I eat the food, I play games again. Mm-hmm. So I don't listen to any podcasts that are anything other than video games. But I did get into Serial for a while. Serial season one was really good. And then, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of the follow-up stuff.
Interrupting, but I remember the only one I remember you talking to me about that was non-gaming related was the... Was it like a Batman audio series?
I was literally going to say, Batman Unburied.
Yes.
That kind of goes off the boil when they finally reveal stuff towards the end of season one. But like that, though, I forget the name of the dude that voices Batman. It might be Winston Duke. But is it Winston Duke? Is that the guy from Predator?
I'm not sure.
That's Bill Duke. It is Winston Duke. He
Bad
was in
with names
Black Panther.
In this podcast. I am,
The Batman Unburied series was really cool. And I haven't finished the second one for that. But I like Bill Burr's podcast as well. Like that's he just does a whole thing where he just does a Thursday podcast,
right?
And just talks about everything, just random life stuff and
sports
and whatever. But I jump past the sports. it's nearly all video game related stuff.
Yeah, I'm the exact opposite, unsurprisingly. I actually don't listen to any gaming podcasts. Similarly, I used to listen to Kind of Funny. Back in the day, it's the channel that actually made me think, hey, I kind of want to do this as a job. I wonder if that's possible. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they dropped off or anything. It's just when I started doing this job, I was doing so much gaming-related stuff. We do the news, we do the podcasts, and I just kind of thought, everything we've talked about, that has become work now.
Right.
So I don't want to go home and then listen to someone else talk about the stuff we talked about. No, because I think my opinion is more important. Not at all. Just it's like it's so close to what I do for work that I'm like I kind of want to separate from that a bit. Mm-hmm. So the only podcasts I listen to are things entirely unrelated. I love You're Wrong About with Sarah Marshall, which shines a light on kind of historical news stories where or at least the mainstream media sort of got the wrong end of the stick, like misrepresenting people or misrepresenting stories and what happened to them. It's often a really cool examination on. Like specifically women who were demonized in the media, but like are like so much more complex and like don't have their true stories kind of like properly told. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I listened to one called Maintenance Phase, which is kind of about like health myths in a way, and kind of like again similarly like health scares and why they blew up, and looking into like the real history and real science behind them. They're really good. That's hosted by Michael someone and. Aubrey Gordon. I literally went to meet her because she has a film out called Your Fat Friend, which is really great.
Nice.
But I went to meet her and she was lovely and I was like, your podcast is so good.
That's cool. Yeah, the Serial podcast was awesome. The first season of Serial was like this really cool like murder mystery audiobook thing that blew up, and then the following seasons have been different stories. And I've dipped back in every now and then, and it's like something like Batman Unburied. Like I'll get like one season of something.
Yeah.
Like the Behind the Bastards podcast, the Vince McMahon set is really good. In terms of just like the amount of things that dude got away with. And I'll do that. But in terms of week to week stuff, it tends to be the Nextlander, Jeff Gerstmann, Sacred Symbols, like stuff like
right,
that.
Right, okay. Maybe I'll try to get back at the game once. I really liked, I've listened to a few episodes of Jacob Geller's Something Rotten. Mm-hmm. And it's not because of, again, the quality of the podcast. They've got a new miniseries on Disco Elysium that I really want to dedicate the time to. It's just, I rarely listen to podcasts anyway just because of the length, but maybe I'll try to get into that.
I do need to Google more of it. It's how I found some of the Serial stuff, but I do love a good like audio drama. Mm. Like I do love like I like the art of creating a space through audio only, like the sound effects and like you put a good set of headphones on, you got the 3D space like audio. I do like that when it's done well. The Batman one's really atmospheric, and that was really, really cool, especially when he's like walking through Arkham itself.
Yeah.
And it's like all these like distant drips and dankness and stuff. And I was like, I like that your mind paints the picture. I think that's a fun feeling.
Interesting. Like, I've never really been into audiobooks, but I've always been interested in them, and I always kind of wanted to pivot into them because I like podcasts.
Yeah.
I thought they're not a million miles away, but the audio drama stuff. There's one being advertised at the moment that I see every time I'm in the cinema. I think it's 1984, and it might be James McAvoy that, but I'm like, maybe that's the one. I really like the book back in the day. Mm. Scott, I've got two quick ones to hit you with before we move off food.
Hit me.
Ben Davies says, what is the best sandwich filling? Crisps is the correct answer.
I don't think this. I'm a big Coronation Chicken fan. Call me
you are
a queen lover. I never thought of that as a royalist filling, but apparently it is.
Yep, you're a monarch lover.
It tastes delicious.
Unfortunately.
I ate it first, and then I found out what it was. But I will also say chicken and bacon. A bit of a simple man.
Yeah, chicken
sometimes
and bacon.
Sometimes you just find those little pots of chicken and bacon. It's pretty damn good.
I'm really simple as well. It's a chicken salad for me. Just chicken, tomato, maybe a cucumber in there, lettuce, mayo. Done.
I'm going to give you all my cucumbers. I don't want them.
I love cucumbers.
I hate them.
We're finding out so much about you during this podcast.
I'll give you a little pile of cucumbers.
And finally, I love this question. It popped me. This is from Mr. Perky, a.k.a. Adam Perkin, says, have you ever tried mint sauce in your beans? Quality. Thanks for the pod. I love that.
That sounds like a euphemism.
Hell yeah. I've never had mint sauce in my beans, though. I am a bean lover, but I question, why would you want to change the bean taste?
Tastes perfect. I love mint sauce, and I'll put it on everything. Like the whole thing where mint sauce is only supposed to go with lamb can get in the bin. I like putting it on as many meats as possible. Put it on mashed potato, put it in my Yorkshire puddings. I don't care. Lather my Sunday roast in mint sauce. I love it so much. I've never used mint sauce outside of a Sunday roast context.
So you never had it. You've never had it on chips then? Because when I started watching Rate My Takeaway, he always used to, I don't know if he still does, I haven't watched it in a while, order his chips from the takeaway shop with mint sauce.
And I didn't know that was an option.
Bizarre.
That's some weird, maybe it's a regional thing because he's from Leeds, I think. But maybe mint sauce on chips is a thing. That sounds criminal to me. Mint sauce is a Sunday condiment. Chips are not a Sunday food.
I'd only ever seen
Sunday lunch
on a Sunday lunch. Yeah. Like I've never seen it anywhere else in Starlight's car.
But then again,
broadening my horizons.
Then again, you get gravy on chips and no one's batting an eyelid at that.
That's true, but I'm not the mint police, you know what I mean?
To be fair.
Like Adam here has got mint sauce in his beans and I'm like, you know what,
I mean,
you
that's,
do you.
You know, some things you just shouldn't admit in public, but
it's quality.
Yeah, he's going for a surface area coverage. I'm thinking that if you put mint sauce on potato, then it should work on chips, because what are they if not potato?
I don't know if I'm here for this. Mm. I'd rather have bean sauce on my mint than I would have mint on my bean sauce.
I just don't want bean sauce. I just get it away from me.
I'd drink a pint of bean sauce. Next up, we've got Brett Murphy, and this is more one for you, Scott Tailford, who says, question that I'm sure many of us are wondering as longtime fans/followers and industry hopefuls, what does it take to become a member of the What Culture team? Do you have to live in the UK? Where can job postings be found? What credentials/experiences are you looking for? Etc., etc. Now, you have have way more involvement with this, even though you're not a recruit yourself, but as the head of the gaming channel manager, you know more about this than me. So what would this
mean? Well, if that's that, the way that's phrased implies, like, how do I get a job right now? Mm. And right now, the team is like a very specific size. We've been operating like this for a while, so it's hard. If anyone has worked in media or in certain media jobs, if a team is performing well from the top down, it is so, so hard to get any money thrown your way to recruit anybody else. So as painful as that might be to hear in regards to getting a position at WoW Culture, we're pretty sewn up, even though there are always writing positions. You can always freelance for us on the article side of things. But yeah, in regards to actually like working in the office, like the brass tacks reality of that at the minute is that the walls are up. But
yeah,
if the money frees up, you'll see adverts go up and stuff. And there might still be some things listed in terms of like, you know, other channel positions. But like I said, it's the writing freelance side that's always going overall. But the actual staff positions are a lot harder just because of like, we got acquired by Future PLC, I think it's their full term, 2 years ago now. And their whole thing was running a far tighter ship in that regard, which means that we have to perform as we can.
Absolutely.
But in terms of like industry hopefuls and stuff, like, I mean, the way that I got in was just writing my ass off and just making my own portfolio, because I remember thinking, like, back then, 2011, 2012, as I was in uni, it was all like, well, you can't get hired if you haven't got any work, and you can't get the work if you, sorry, you can't get any hired, can't get hired if you don't have any experience, and you can't get any experience if you can't, like, without being hired. So I was like, well, how do I just make, I'll just make the work.
Yeah.
I'll just go, like, in that case, it was music reviews. I'll just go to some gigs. I'll do some reviews and just do as much writing as possible so that you actually have something to show for it. You know, when you actually do get a chance to go for an interview or something.
Yeah.
And then from there, got the intern position at the older office that we had. But like, I guess to address the local, the geography side of it, yeah, I was local. I was able to sit down in person. I think the pandemic changed a lot of that.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, Sai, like, is remote, and like, she's always been remote. She comes up every now and then, but that's more of a staff thing again. So yeah, I think it's a really hard industry to break into, and in more of a staff position now. But I also think, as you know, I have a lot of thoughts on that, because I think a lot of the wider companies are struggling to retain staff, and a lot of the old game journalism model doesn't even make sense anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you look at how much IGN have switched to just freelancers. Like, they have like three people who are known people. Like, there's a Dustin Legere, Ryan McCaffrey, and one more dude. And it's like that whole industry, or the whole industry, has shifted in regards to what a game journalist outlet is. So in a way, you're maybe better off being in a freelance position and being able to freelance for various outlets, compare rates, and kind of go from there, as opposed to hoping you'll get a staff position, which are what it seems like increasingly more threadbare.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that, doesn't it? I suppose I'm not really involved with it, but I know if we do ever get positions, it'll pop up on Indeed, or there's a career pages on our website. And if you check the Future PLC careers website, there'll be stuff from across everything that they own in our sort of sister companies and stuff. And I just echo what you said, like, even if you're not getting the work from a freelance perspective, or you're not getting it published, like, just keep doing whatever you're doing. And I know I've been there, man. Like, it's frustrating. It feels pointless at times. It feels like homework where you're just writing something and you know it's never going to be seen. But if you can come in to an opportunity or an interview and you have that body of work, if you have stuff to show off, like, that's more important than a university degree. It's more important than a lot of things. If you can just prove that you're good at what you do, and if you practice and practice and practice, and you come in with like a portfolio of stuff that might not even be published, but is really solid, like, that's something that is valued a lot.
Yeah, and I think like doing it for yourself as well, like, there's obviously, like, you know, you have some sort of steady job. I used to work retail. Like, I was always doing reviews. I was writing all the time. I'd get home from one job and go into another one, kind of thing, or I'd go to a gig, or I'd play a game or watch a movie, sorry, and I would try and review that as well. Do it for you first. You have to have that core of like, I'm loving doing this. I'm loving the craft of writing the sentences, of forming the thoughts and like analyzing something. I think as long as you have that, they can't take it away from you. And so, like, that'll only be the thing that you tap back into as the opportunities come along.
Yes.
But you need to want to do it at a core level. Like, it's always that thing of, like, what would you do if you had infinite money? I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Like, I would sack off the more stressful parts of the job, but I would still be creating. I'd still be podcasting. I'd still be talking about video games, like, or talking about media. That's how I know that it's in me. And so, like, it's that. Like, if you ask yourself that, and then, like, or try and foster that sort of genuine core side of it,
yeah.
Then, like I said, as much as you might get knocked back from 20 different things, at least you're enjoying the hobby that you have.
Totally. I fully agree. Like, you know, I got lucky that the writing, the article writing I did became relevant to this job, but there's so much other stuff that I did that didn't become relevant. Like, I used to make short movies all the time.
Nice.
Literally just to pop myself and about five friends and to get them around. And it was a good exercise learning how to edit, learning how to light a scene, learning how to write a script. Mm-hmm. So many scripts that obviously I knew would never get made because I was 16 and I lived in a working class mining town with no media connections, but I did it just for like the fun of it, to kind of show my friends and stuff. And if you have that sort of drive and you're doing it, I guess, for the quote unquote right reasons, you're not just doing it for the amount of clicks or whatever it is, then hopefully that will ultimately become beneficial. And I guess the important thing is, like you said, even if it doesn't lead to a job, you still find a lot of value in it. Cause I'm the same as you. Like, I would still be doing this to an audience of zero people if I didn't have this job, right? Because it just scratches that creative itch, I guess.
Yeah, when I started my blog, it was like, I just used to think of it as like writing for the audience of none. Like it was just, writing for the invisible audience. Because if I would always like log back in, it was Blogspot back then, and log back in and see like, oh, there's been 30 visits on this page, and be like, okay, cool, 30 people, that's cool. Maybe they liked it or something, and then I would review a movie or something, and then it would get 100 because I was looking. I would always check Google's search results and be like, oh, I'm on page 30.
Yeah,
that's cool. But yeah, it's like it's fun. I mean, the amount of avenues now, like it depends what you want to do, but if you're like writing to get a thought out there, like, which I love doing, like if I have a take on something, I love talking about it. I want to like put it in audio form, video form, like I just love that. So like there are so many more avenues to do that now. Like the podcast infrastructure is up and running, and it wasn't when we were younger, super young anyway. But then even like YouTube is way more, like the way YouTube's algorithms work, the amount of tiny or upstart channels that get put on the homepage, all you need is one really good, well-edited, interesting video, and YouTube will push that thing for like the next few weeks, and then you've got a following, and then you go from there. Like, it's not that easy, but then sometimes it is.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's there are opportunities there, I suppose, but I guess as long as you're proud of what you're doing, like that's the most important thing. I think, like, I love doing this podcast, and I'm so grateful that anyone even listens to it and gets in touch and says that they like it. But you know, truthfully, I do it primarily because I like to come here and talk to you about stuff. We always joke that these are the conversations that we'd have off mic anyway.
Totally. So why not just record
stuff? There were so many times where we've had an hour and a half conversation and gone at the end of it, oh, that could have been the podcast we're about to do. Why have we just done that there? And yeah, I think it's like some of the work that I'm the most proud of, at least in the written format, and it's the stuff I did in university. It's the essays that I wrote and the way I developed, and those were seen by literally me and my professor. Right. No one else that will ever see them. Mm-hmm. They weren't intended to be seen, but I think about my best writing and that's what comes to mind.
Well, it was like, we did a one on part one of this about like what we're most proud of, and mine was the Red Dead Redemption 2 is about the death of Rockstar, and I was glad that got it wasn't millions of views, it was only like over 100k or something, which is quite small in the legacy of the channel, but still I did that for me to be able to do it, to say those things and make the video and get it out there and see what if other people like it. Awesome. But yeah, I think you always need that core side of it.
I think that's an important thing to realize as well, and it's hard to stomach, or at least it was for me when I first started working here, that the stuff you're most interested in, honestly, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be the stuff that gets the most views.
Right.
And I think you kind of have to become a little bit comfortable with that. Like when I did one that I'm really proud of on a game called Before Your Eyes, and one on Stay Out the House the other year, but I knew that wasn't going to hit a million views.
No.
It was going to struggle to hit 50,000 views, which again, it's still a lot, but in the context of like our job, what we're sometimes aiming for are those like big hits.
Well, my thing with that is that that's the challenge. Like I fundamentally believe that if something is worthwhile for either of us, like in terms of like a game, a movie, whatever it is, the challenge is to get someone who didn't know they would like it to be interested in it.
Yes.
So like it's all about repackaging. It's why we do so many lists that are like overlooked games of the last month, overlooked games of the last year, hidden gems, whatever it is, secret mechanics. Like every time we talk about stuff in real life, it's always like, well, that wouldn't work by itself, but if you find 9 other examples, we can highlight stuff, and that's still serving, like at least you're highlighting a part of a game or something. Like to me, that's always like the challenge.
Oh, totally. I guess I would differentiate it by saying that's certainly important if you're trying to make it a job. If you're looking at companies like ours who want a certain set of skills or whatever. But yeah, I personally would say if you're doing it for yourself, like just do what is the least compromised version while you're not getting, if you're not part of a company, you're not getting paid for it or whatever, like just be passionate about it, be proud of it.
No, totally. It was just when you just said about like the hardest bit to get used to, which is the same thing. Yeah. I was like, I can't make a video on Hotline Miami,
right.
But like I can put on Hotline in 50 other lists and talk about it anyway. But yeah, like in terms of this job, it's always been, there's not been anything that we couldn't talk about, whether it was on the podcast or the videos, but then it is just a framing device.
We'd find a way. We always
Life
end up
content finds a way.
Do you want to do an hour podcast in 12 minutes? Well, I guess we're going to do that this week. Another industry one to round this off, Scott Tilford, and maybe a quick one. You Done Messed Up Aaron says, we got two more. Done Messed Up Aaron says, good day, gents. Hope you're doing well. Is it time for updated UBP mugs? Maybe get Josh, Cy, and Ewan's lovely faces on them. Hooray for Scott's upcoming cherub. And Lee Cleesby says, are there any plans to do a live in-person podcast akin to the Wrestling Crew? Now, I'll answer Lee's first.
Yes.
No, not at this moment in time.
Not right now, though, but yeah.
I don't want to jinx it. I almost don't even want to say it out loud. That is what I would love to do more than anything.
The live show.
Yeah. I don't want to say it out loud because when I talked about the Spotify Q&A, I jinxed that three times in a row. So I'm not even going to speak it into existence, but all I'll say is, Lee, I see you. I'd love it to happen, but I'm not going to put any plans on an actual thing in case it doesn't end up working.
I think both are doable. I was going to say easily doable, but they are really. Both are doable, but I personally can't look past the child I'm about to create.
Oh, of course,
but yeah. I do want to do both those things. And we talked about it already, like the mug side of things. Rich Hudson, if you're listening to this, I'll be in touch with you at some point across the rest of this year. Because the lovely Rich Hudson did the artwork for those original mugs, which is, we were then able to sort of, I edited some of parts of it to make it like a bigger banner to put around the mug. If we end up doing that, I want to bring him back because I love that original UBP art style. And I talked to Jules about doing it as well. And he was like, yeah, man, he's like, the UBP is like everyone's show now because of how much bigger it's gotten, which is awesome. It's talked about, bringing that stuff together in reality and making sure the right people get paid is a different thing.
Yeah.
But, I'd like to do all that stuff. It's just, I don't know, if I was going to ballpark it, like another few months.
Oh yeah,
something
absolutely.
Like that.
I mean, I'm always so insecure about the live show in particular because I was insecure putting out the tweet for these questions because my thought was, what if no one responds and I look silly and I'm embarrassed, you know? It's probably silly, and it's funny because I used to look at other people who admittedly are way bigger than us and have way more bigger profiles when they would go kind of solo and they'd say, like, I didn't know if anyone would follow.
Right.
I used to think, like, how could you possibly think that? But now I'm in a much smaller position, but a similar position. I think, well, no one might come.
But you also, like, you don't want to take it for granted, and I wouldn't. Like, it's, I guess we genuinely mean it when it's an honor that anyone listens. Like, you wouldn't want to bank on it and be like, well, of course I'll get loads of responses. And it's like, that's just a good, humble way to be, I think.
A long-winded way of saying, if the interest is there, it's something we'd both be interested in.
The whole, the live thing, I don't know if anyone crosses over to listening to the What Culture Wrestling podcast, but they did, or have done a few live shows now. They've got one going on as we're recording this over in, like, New York or Philly or something. I just don't know anything about venue hire and that kind of stuff, but once I get my head around it, like, yeah, man.
Well, this is it. I actually met Lee, who sent in that question at the wrestling live show in Newcastle.
Cool.
He was a legend, by the way.
Right.
And it was just nice to see that vibe of everyone, you know, talking to the wrestling boys. I got to go in like incognito.
Right.
I was on the door signing people in. Just wanted to see the fellas have a nice time that night. And it was lovely. So I'd like to be on the other side of that.
Same.
Anyway, Scott Tilford,
hi.
Music. JP says, I've got a music question for you gents. My wife looks at me sideways when I say I prefer to listen to albums top to bottom rather than a playlist of multiple artists. How do you both typically listen to music, album or a playlist?
I'll do album if it's brand new. I'm never going to... My wife has a weird argumental approach to the shuffle button. Hates it.
I'm with your wife. I really am.
I can't stand it. I'll do it in order if it's when it first comes out.
Yeah.
And then I'll shuffle it after that. Why am I doing it in order?
Because it's sequenced, often intentionally so, to create a contained experience.
But do you listen to playlists?
Sometimes.
So you're up for the shuffle?
I'm up for the shuffle on occasion.
Well,
but I am with JP in that nine times out of ten, I'm listening to music, I'll put an album on and put it top to bottom.
Oh, nah.
No,
something always gets in the way, and then I'm like, I've listened to the first four songs over and over and over and over again. I just want to put it on shuffle.
I'm with you for playlists. I, of course, love a playlist, but the idea of an album shuffle, I don't think I'm down for that.
It depends how it was recorded. If it's a concept album, there's a build, and I, quote-unquote, need the build. Even then, I'll shuffle it. I remember shuffling stuff that had those like little interstitial mock songs in.
Yeah.
One of Ina Shikari's albums had those little like weird non-songs in, and Coheed and Cambria do it all the time. And I'm shuffling, and I'll get like some weird little atmospheric sound effect that's supposed to bridge two songs. I'm skipping it.
Oh,
I'm not. But I would have done it the first time through. It just depends on a feel to vibe. I'm not having a rule one way or the other, but I do love a good shuffle.
Yeah, I guess I'm not like, I suppose I am hard pressed on the shuffle thing, especially if I'm playing it. Like, I guess it's because I listen to a lot of vinyl.
Right.
When I put, you know, a record on, it's going all the way through. I can, of course, change it by moving the needle around, but that's faff to me.
I remember that's the whole thing. It's a technological limitation. Like, CDs, vinyls, they force you to do it in order. So when the world advanced, why are you going back?
I disagree about it being a technological limitation, because it is in one sense. Mm. But we're in the post-streaming service era now, and artists still intentionally sequence those albums.
I'm not saying I wouldn't listen to an album. I'm just saying I'm not against the shuffle. I'm loving the shuffle after I've been through a couple albums.
I love a playlist, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And we've got Sean Owen, who says, what are both of your favourite bands? I know Scott is into metal. Absolutely he is.
I would nearly always say Alterbridge, because I have the Alterbridge tattoo, but I feel like over the years, I don't want to limit myself to one favourite band.
Yeah.
So it's like, there are certain ones that like pop up and I'm like, oh my God, these are phenomenal. I can't listen to them enough. I'm literally going to go on my on repeat because I want to bring up a few different bands that I've got going. Bring Me the Horizon have quickly become one of my favorite bands. I realized seeing them live at the start of the year that I was just like, oh, you guys have ascended so much and you just dominate the stage and the songs are just phenomenal, like built for the audience as much as they're built for them. And I love it. I have a lot of synth stuff that I love. I love Polyphia, Polaris, Periphery. John Mayer, oh my God.
You had a big John Mayer
that never
period.
Stopped. That
really?
Never stopped. That was me discovering him. Mm. Where like I always knew John Mayer as the dude that did the guitar solo in Fall Out Boy's cover of Beat It, and then I didn't listen to the rest of it, or the rest of his stuff. And then it was in 2021, I think, whenever I went to the Lake District in the UK, and I don't know what made me put Mayer on, but for whatever reason, I was just talking about guitarists or something, and I was like, oh, because his song Neon is always held up as one of the hardest pieces of music to play. It's like this really specific picking pattern with your right hand. It's so hard to do. I can't do it. But from there, I was like, I always hear about John Mayer. Mm. And I just remember putting his album Continuum on, which is a masterpiece from 2006, and just falling in love with him. Like, dude, like he only has like one not perfect album. It's like this like country follow-up thing that he did. Back when he sort of quit Hollywood and he was recovering and stuff. But the amount of songs that he's just utterly bang on with, just beautiful music, exquisite playing, like the best guitarist on the planet. I said that before about Mark Tremonti, but he is. And I would shout out John Mayer. I can't get enough of Mayer. That explosion of like, you know, when you realize like, oh my God, this is perfect.
Yes.
And then that never abated. I have Mayer on all the time. Like, he's gorgeous. That.
We've got another question. I'll go back to mine in a second, but from AJ Lala, I think. Again, so sorry for pronunciations. I am so bad. I can't even pronounce my own name. Who asks, what are your favorite non-metal groups? Not super into heavy metal, so looking for alts. Would Mayer be your
That'll
shot
be Mayer.
That? Yeah.
And then just synth stuff. Like I love Lukash. I love Carpenter Brew. Pensacola Mist, I've been discovering like a lot of like funky like electronica dance stuff like because of Tekken and looking at some of the Tekken composers' separate stuff.
Yeah.
The dude that like composed Tekken 3, I forget his full name, but he's called like Sanod or something on Spotify. It's like Sanodg. And then someone sent me this dude called Nato, which is Nhato. His Rin EP is like phenomenal, just like floor filling, like thick music. I love it. I have like quite a big variety of stuff on, but I think it's like an overall genre thing. Like if I'm not listening to metal, I'll be listening to synth, or I'll be listening to soft stuff. I love lo-fi. I love things like that. But Mayer, I mean, Adam Strawn introduced me to City in Color, who's like another like kind of John Mayer-esque artist, and just can't get enough of like just beautiful, like kind of soulsy folk stuff.
Nice.
With an extra edge of like, oh, the guitar playing is next level. I always need that little extra, it can't just be chords. It's got to have a little bit more to
you're,
it.
We've talked about this before, but you're way more into the musicianship of tracks than I guess I am, because
I don't care about lyrics.
I don't know anything about music, you know, something I'm passionate about, but I can hold my hands up and say I don't know anything about music theory, music production. I've never played an instrument. I don't know why I like it. I just know I like it, you know? So
and
I'm
I remember
not playing them in certain ways.
Yeah, like I remember what that felt like, and then what it felt like to discover like how music is built, essentially, and then be like, oh, I can't take this back.
Right.
And then being like, oh, but it's a further appreciation for the people who can pull it off. And yeah, and someone like John Mayer, like just an unbelievable talent. Like someone I'm just glad to be on the earth with.
Nice.
Like he should have a new album this year. It's been put back a little bit. But yeah, Mayer fans know the whole deal with that guy. But John Mayer, Alderbridge are my top two.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think for me, what's your favorite music, or who are your favorite artists, is almost an impossible question to answer.
That's my initial response, because was like, how do I whittle this down?
Yeah, everything I say will be the truth, but I'll feel like I'm missing out about 20 or 30 other artists. So the first couple of artists that come to mind are, I think Slaughter Beach Dog's probably my top one of all time, maybe. I love the songwriting, very folky, almost country adjacent in parts. Their songwriting is incredible. They're amazing live, great vibe. Love it. One of my favorite lyricists. The Front Bottoms has been one of my favorite bands since 2013, so going on 11 years.
Nice.
They were the band that kind of broadened my horizons, because I loved music my entire life, but I listened to the same handful of artists over and over again. You know, learning the discography to Green Day or Rise Against whoever it was.
Rise Against.
And I only ever listened to the Front Bottoms because they were announced on a festival lineup that I was going to. And I was kind of going through the names, just like looking for stuff. And I thought, that's a strange name. I'll give them a listen. I'll listen to them. And they became my favorite band. And it made me think, well, if this is a random name I've plucked out of a lineup, what else have I been missing out on? Mm. So I always hold them in high regard for kind of introducing me to like a broader spectrum of music and looking for smaller bands that could become my favorites.
I do love, in that regard, I love Spotify song radio, artist radio. Like if you, anything that you just like, you're vibing with, I love clicking the thing and being like, just give me 50 more of these.
Yes.
And I get that it's like algorithmically generated, but it might point you in a direction of someone that you didn't know before.
I fully agree, man. I guess other than that, I love Mitski. I'm seeing her again next month in May at the time I'm recording this. Love everyone in Boy Genius. Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, Lucy Dacus. That Lucy Dacus last album is one of my all-time favorites. I think that's incredible. Those are off the top of my head right now, but I'm going to miss out 200 million.
I think I mentioned Coheed and Cambria before. Yeah, for like shuffling stuff. Their most recent album, Vaxxers 2, was unbelievable. Coheed and Cambria, one of my absolute favorites. I also want to shout out Linkin Park, damn it.
Oh, go on, yeah.
Because Linkin Park, like the trajectory that they had, like everyone kind of fell off around about the fourth album. It was like, oh, they went too mainstream, they went too soft back in the day. Everyone just wanted aggro stuff. stuff. We couldn't believe they were doing a lot softer stuff. Didn't like the electronica stuff. During the pandemic, I guess it was because Chester passed away, that I ended up going back over their stuff and ended up just playing through everything, all of their albums in order, not on shuffle, funnily enough, just to see how it landed, because it was one of the bands that I feel like everyone was talking about back in the day, and then everyone got sick of, even though they maintained arenas and they were huge. And going through all their albums in order is like a great trajectory for a series of artists. Like, you really see them come into their own. There's some great stuff with like just Chester's vocal range. He's really experimenting with himself. There's one song, and I'm gonna forget the album that it's on, but there's a song where it's just Chester and a guitar, and apparently on the day the mics weren't even tuned in properly. There's like crackle on the mics and stuff, but he just started playing this song, and it's just him and a guitar and just this one solo performance kind of thing, and it's beautiful. And it's like, he was such a beautiful soul, like the more you look into him kind of thing, and the amount of struggles he had, and then like reading and looking back at the albums and the lyrics he was writing retrospectively, knowing what was going on with him and how much he was battling depression and everything else. And then it's not like it really saves that most recent album they did, because it is kind of overly sugary. It doesn't necessarily save the compositions, but it does make me appreciate what was going on with him. And like, overall with Linkin Park, like, I think there's so much more to love in those middle albums. Like, I'm blank on the names of the albums, but the one that looks like an explosion on the front, I think, is like their masterpiece. And it's just they had such a great progression, such a great trajectory, and I really like where Mike Shinoda's at the minute as well. Like, they're all like twin vocalist and DJ and stuff.
Yeah,
they just deserve to be up there, and they kind of are anyway.
Yeah,
but they just didn't. They never got their due because of where music was at back then.
Yeah,
and they were doing great experimental stuff with like you know, electronics and dance music and stuff like that. And just I feel like they deserve their due because it's a hell of a body of work.
Hell yeah, man! Every time you talk about Linkin Park, I think I need to listen to more Linkin Park, because I'm such a novice when it comes to them.
I like them.
Two more that I'll shout out are Arctic Monkeys, very basic pick, but my God, Alex Turner's songwriting, especially on Suck It and See and The Ladder 2, The Car and Tranquility Base. Mm-hmm. Life-changing experiences, Scott Tilford.
I like Tranquility Base.
Tranquility Base is... Oh,
Hotel and Casino.
Magic. Honestly, Johnny Cash. I'm still huge into, but wow, in my formative years, just going through the extensive discography that man has.
From
his gospel era right up until the American recordings, incredible.
Yeah, the other day, me and my wife were talking about Johnny Cash and Orville Peck. Just, I'm not big on Cash or Peck, but if I think about, like, because I'm just not a lyric, I'm not listening for lyrics, I never am. Like, they're the last thing I go to. It's cool if the lyrics make sense, but I don't care.
Right.
I'm there for the harmony and the instrumentation and everything else. But if I do listen to something that's lyrically driven, it's Tom Waits.
I just adore
Tom Waits. Like, just his whole vibe. I love his voice. I love how messed up it is. And just the way he writes the poetry. Like, yeah, dude.
Yeah, no, I get that. Like, for me, it's Townes Van Zandt, who I kind of listened to from, I think it was 70s, kind of like, again, going for that sort of country western vibe. Mm-hmm. I like the storytelling inherent to that. There's so many, Scott. Frank Ocean, of course, need a shout out. Wolf Alice, we could be on all day. So yeah. I'm going to move on right now. Lego Brick.
Big fan of
him. Nice pun. Said, just discovered Pop Rock Factory. What would you say is the best song cover, and does it surpass the original?
Oh, man. We did a video ages ago on the best covers back when we had the music channel going. And I love Denzel Curry's version of Bulls on Parade. Rage Against the Machine's Bulls on Parade.
Yeah.
Just, like, he throws himself into it so much. It was one of those, is it Like a Session, the YouTube channel? Or Like a Version,
like
I think
a version.
It's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a Session.
Triple G, I think.
Yes, and and it's one of them where they just got, I think it's some house musicians or whatever, and got Denzel Curry on vocals, and it's just this, like, furious cover of Bulls on Parade, but then instead of the Tom Morello solo, he does, like, a passage, I forget the name of the song that it's from, but he does, like, a kind of like a rap solo, which is a passage from a different one of his songs that he fits into the same bars that were on the solo, and it's just, it's all so tight. And then when it comes back into the chorus again, I love that version of that song. It's like almost sacrilege to say it's better than the Rage one, because they're just one of the most totemic bands of all time, but it's damn close. And
I
love
to that
sounds, Denzel Curry one.
Give that a go when I go back.
That thing rules.
Oh, I think for me it's a basic one, but it's the one that I have to choose because I just shouted him out. But Johnny Cash Hurt.
Oh, of course.
I love that. Love the video. To me, it's better than the Nine Inch Nails one, but I can concede that people might think that's sacrilegious, but it absolutely works for me. And I'm kind of blanking on other ones that I prefer to the original. Normally, I'm like an original
guy. The thing is, like, music stuff's hard because we listen to music all the time. Like, if we're in between recordings, we've got the headphones on, we're listening to tunes. Like, if I'm on the train or whatever, I'm listening to music. It's an omnipresent thing. I have it on when I'm cooking. I have it on all the time when I'm walking around the house or whatever. So then if someone stops and just says, which bit stands out the most? And I'm like, well, kind of all of it, but, like, it's kind of, it's a lot of different things. And I've never actually put together, like, a covers playlist, but the... Maybe we should. My brain just served up the... whatever the hell I said. The Denzel Curry one. We've been recording for 2.5 hours.
We certainly have. I think I've got one more that does come to mind, actually. It's a band called Girlpool who covered a song called Cut Your Bangs, which was a Radiator Hospital. A hospital? That's right? Maybe not. Again, recording for 2.5 hours. Don't know where I am. yeah, it was an original by another band, and their version is just like ethereal and magic. The best. Would definitely recommend you listen to it if you haven't. Moving on, Scott Tilford from Music. We've done a lot of these. Mm-hmm. We have Tiny Mouse who says, do you have any odd hobbies or pastimes that don't sit with your age/demographic or normal go-to things? Any weird hobbies you got going on?
No weird. I think that, like, depending on who you talk to, the idea of collecting figures and, like, looking after figures and, like, posing figures is, like, a thing. But, my wife doesn't care. She's in support of it. Like, you know, I think maybe on some abstract sense, someone will be like, you collect figures. Action figures. No, I'm not sitting playing. I'm not recreating scenes.
Right.
And, like, acting through stuff and playing with them like I would have done if I was 5 years old. But I love collectible figures.
Yeah.
The more articulation points, the better, mainly because I can pose them in different ways and then leave them. And I can, like, replicate scenes and stuff. But I love that stuff. And, nine times out of ten, if I play something and I like it or watch something and I like it, when I look up the associated merch, because I love getting a tie-in bit of merch, I'll look at whatever figures are available. When I watched Akira again the other week, I went straight online and started looking at Akira figures. And there's something about making it real, like taking it off the screen and it's in front of you and you can hold it, that I love that feeling.
That's interesting. Yeah. I've never had that personally, but I've always, especially when I was younger, I wished I could have afforded... like the good merch from the stuff that I liked or the good figures from the stuff that I like. Mm-hmm. And then when I got older and realized how, what would you even describe it? I don't know.
Stupidly overpriced.
Well, there is that, but more the economy of space that you have in a house or an apartment. I thought, if I get into this, there's no going back. Like, I've got way too many books, you know, I need to get rid of some of those books because it's just overflown. And I thought if I ever got into memorabilia or Funko Pops or whatever it was, it would take over my entire life.
F Funko Pops, they suck. But I've got, that's the thing. I've got stuff in storage that I rotate out because, you just don't have enough shelf space. But it's like that overall, the thing is that with, like, the cost of it is, like, manufacturing processes have got so much better. Like, if you look at the Star Wars figures that were available in the 70s and the 80s, they're terrible compared to what's available now.
Yeah.
Like, you can see the three bits of plastic from a mold that slotted together to make that character, as opposed to something like, you know, look at the newest version of the Bring Arts Kai figures for the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. They look like they do in the game. Like, they're perfect and they're articulate and you can pose them and stuff. And I think a lot of the general manufacturing has come a long way, like any technology would. But then some of them have sky high prices because you're paying for the brands. But stuff like the PlayArts Kai figures, because there's Bring Arts and PlayArts, but the PlayArts Kai figures for Final Fantasy VII Remake are, like, incredible. Like, I've got Cloud, Aerith, Tifa, Sephiroth, like...
They look so lovely. They look so lovely. The ones that I've seen that you have anyway. I'm too boring for any strange hobbies. Yeah. Like, similar to you, my time is made up so much of video games. And if it's not video games, it's music. And if it's not music, it's television, films, all of that stuff. So I want more hobbies. And that actually is the next question from Andrew Gurney, who says, what's a hobby or skill each of you want to learn but haven't had the time to dedicate to it?
I started learning. I can do bits and pieces of it in the pandemic. I really wanted to learn. It was in preparation for going to Japan, but I wanted to learn a specific Japanese flute called a shakuhachi. And I did buy that. I got one made. It was a dude on Etsy who, like, did custom carvings and you carve them into different tunings. And I got that made. I can do like five different shapes on it, but nowhere near enough projection. Some of it's because I've got asthma and I can't blow hard enough, but some of the rest of it is just spending the time where, because you need to work the muscles on your mouth, you need to get these specific shapes with your lips and everything, and then get stronger with your cheeks so you can blow the air out stronger and sharper.
I remember you learning this. Yeah.
It's like I did all the beginning of it, and every sort of, I don't know, a few months I'll pick it back up and just sit with it and go back through what I was doing, but I just need to spend more time with it. I play guitar every day, like just pick it up, play guitar, like I'll do more of a session with it or whatever, and I don't do shakuhachi sessions, and I should, but I love wind instruments.
Yeah.
And I've said all that, I'll swap it out. Well, I wish I could speak Japanese.
I kind of can,
but I've been learning Japanese for about 540 days or so now, just through Duolingo, and Duo has like a lot of back and forth as to the pros and cons. And a lot of the cons are that it doesn't teach you spoken Japanese, and some of that stuff will be different per language, but there's a lot of stuff in Japanese that is just very tonal. There's like four different ways to say a lot of the same things depending on how you want to say it. And a lot of emphasis that is in the words themselves, as opposed to sometimes in English, you would just stress different parts of it. Mm. Whereas like, from what I understand in a lot of Japanese, it's like you would add a different word to make it soft, regardless of how you are like actually saying it volume wise. I wish I could just speak it. I love the language. I wish I could speak South Korean or Korean as well.
Yeah.
I wish I could speak an Eastern language, because I watch so much anime and South Korean dramas and South Korean shows and stuff, and loads of Japanese stuff. And I just wish I could do that without subtitles. Like, I've been lucky enough to go to like Spain, France, New York, Japan, like, or America, Japan. And I love culture, I love language, I love being able to try and talk to people in their language, I love trying to be respectful and all that kind of stuff. I wish I could write it as well. Like, I love how Japanese looks. I'm lucky, like, I keep saying lucky enough, but I've spent the time, Duolingo is good at teaching you written stuff more than how to speak it. But because it's good at the written stuff, I can read written Japanese way better than I can speak it. But still, overall, like, if I was going to just click my fingers and do something, it would be to be, like, super fluent in Japanese. That would be awesome.
I'd love to be able to do that as well. I want to learn some language at some point, mm-hmm. and I want to learn an instrument. Like I said, you know, I don't know anything about music, but I love it. Mm. And I think it's kind of strange that it's the one passion I have that I haven't interrogated beyond a love for it. You know, I never got around to learning
anything. Guitar.
And I really want to get into, me and Adam Nicholas talked about this, I want to get into music production more, and kind of learn more about that. Whether I'll ever get time to do it, I do not know. I'd also love to learn how to cook properly. Food keeps being brought up, right? And I have about three dishes I can make,
right?
And that's it.
Right.
Because sometimes cooking, I think, is hell. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I look in my kitchen and just think, I can't even walk over there. My brain is going to stop me. Get some crisps down here instead, which is not a great way to live. But I have such a struggle with that part of life. But when the stars do align and I am cooking, I find it so therapeutic. It's just that, unfortunately for me personally, 99% of the time it is not. So I want to get over that mental barrier, whatever it is, and kind of really dedicate more time to it. Because when it works, and when I watch my girlfriend do it a lot, she's well into it, like cook some of the best.
It's always like the time trade-off. Like, I'm going to spend like half an hour making this thing that I'll eat in 5 minutes, but it's like, it's you're meant to enjoy the making of it as well. It's all part of the same fun of it.
Like, we talked about routines either in this episode or the last one. We've been going on for that long. And one of mine is when everyone's away and I'm home alone, I'll make my 4-hour pasta sauce. And it's a laborious
the JB special.
Exercise. But it absolutely works, and it is absolutely relaxing and satisfying, because it's like, you can't really mess up sauce. You know, it's a pasta sauce. It's just blending a bunch of stuff and putting it in. And even if it's crap, the meal isn't ruined, because I'll just get some from a tin and put that in instead. And then it's still pasta, you know?
I like the, there's something about transforming foods that is like really satisfying.
Yeah.
Like the ingredients to the final thing. It's just base cooking commentary, but I do like that stuff.
No, 100%.
Uh-huh.
I have one more as well, and I think you like draw and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I love sketching stuff. Yeah.
I proper put that down. I was so into it when I was growing up, and then it was something.
It'll still be in you. Yeah. Like, you just need to do it again.
Like, I've gone back to it now and again, and I'd love to dedicate time to it, because I found that really therapeutic.
I was
sitting
drawing Goku after Akira Toriyama passed away.
Oh, nice.
And it's the same thing with the reason I'm into figures. I love making it real, which is a weird way to phrase it, but I love, like, for the figure thing, I love collecting stuff, making it real, making it physical, and I love drawing, like, I don't know, replicating the thing that you see that's already made, doing it yourself. Something about that's really satisfying.
Yeah, you get like a nice, I was going to find another word, but it is just satisfaction, a nice sense of fulfillment.
Yeah, and it's like, it's kind of drawing your own version of Goku or following it. Like, I'm never going to trace something, but I'll have it as a reference point. And then doing it, it's like, it's a greater appreciation for the craft of the thing you're copying. Like, if I'm learning to play a song on guitar, it's like, oh my God, this is such a cool passage. And like, I don't know, it's the building blocks. For me, it's all a greater appreciation of whatever the thing is.
Yeah, absolutely, man. My next question, well, not my next question, Locks London's next question, admittedly, is one just for me, Scott Tilford. I don't know if you'll have an answer to this, but they ask, what football teams do you support in any of the sports you're into?
For a hot second there, I couldn't think of a single football team.
That's hilarious.
And then I thought, well, I can barely answer this. I'll watch if it's the World Cup and that's England. If it's, what do they call them, club teams?
Yes.
Then I'm from around Newcastle, so it'll be Newcastle, and I have a lot of Geordie pride, even though the accent's completely gone at this point, unless I'm around family. So it's going to be Newcastle, it's going to be England. I don't care about football.
It would have been such a twist if you said Sunderland instead of Newcastle there. No other sports, nothing at all.
I love basketball, I love swimming, like I love when the Olympics is on, I love watching that stuff.
Yeah.
And like tennis and stuff. But I'm not watching things week to week. Like, I mean, obviously wrestling and UFC.
Yes.
But I don't keep up with UFC anywhere near as much as I used to. But AEW I watch every week. Like, nice. That's three shows a week. And like the whole sports entertainment, or the whole, like, it's predetermined, so it's not a sport. You should watch it, it's a sport.
That counts. It's sports entertainment. Yeah. It has sports in the name. That's in a court of law. It would absolutely work.
It's a hell of a physical athletic gauntlet to even be on those shows, so it's definitely competing with each other for TV time.
I've gotten back into football over the past few years, which is why I wanted to selfishly talk about this, because I used to be big into football growing up, like a lot of young boys are, you know.
I used to be super into it too, yeah.
You play football, you watch football, you play football video games.
Get the stickers.
Yeah, you get the stickers.
I love them.
You get the match attacks, it's incredible, you get the little bobbleheads, amazing. But then, I guess, when I sort of fell out of love with it when I was 15, 16. Mm. And I think it's because, and I was talking about this with my partner the other day, but I used to play football a lot. And I used to be all right, like not amazing, but good enough to get into school teams and what have you. And I think my last straw with football was when I tried out for the bigger school team a few years down the line. And by that point, I'd grown my hair out, right?
Nice.
And there was definitely a sort of bias against me then, because we got split into two teams, right? Mm. And it was essentially the people who looked like they'd be good at football and the people who looked like they'd be crap. And I remember getting lumped into there, probably because I had like a Marvel bag and long hair. And like, we weren't watched, we weren't considered. And I remember just thinking, oh, I don't like this now. You know, I've gone off it. Why aren't you paying any attention to us?
The other people won.
I was like, ugh, this is a you thing and it's not a me thing anymore. I'm not part of that club. So I kind of went off it for a bit and then was always still into the international stuff. Mm. But then just never really had a club. Like, I'm from nearby Newcastle, but like my half of my family was Newcastle supporters, half were into Man United. I used to go towards, for my sins, Man United when I was younger.
Ew.
So I don't really support anyone now, but I will watch Newcastle. I'll watch all the Man United games and kind of watch as much as I possibly can. But it's been nice getting back into kind of that side of my life. Mm-hmm. You got back into wrestling, I got back into football, and it's been quite nice watching it. Mine's having that thing every week, more or less.
Like, there's definitely like the communal side of it, or like knowing there's a community around the thing you're watching is fun and energetic and everything. But like, for football, like I played so much of it when I was a kid, I don't know, first 10, 12 years of my life ish before video games were introduced to my life, that I know the rules inside out. I know what a good game of football is. I know what a good play is or whatever, like enough to watch it and be like, this is the beautiful game. Like, it's beautiful. Like, I remember watching, it was a couple of World Cups ago, some top left corner penalty thing that we got through, and then they played it back in slow motion and I was in the pub and we were all celebrating. I was like, this is the best feeling ever, to be honest. So
it's the absolute best.
The thing is, the same as we're recording this, we're like 4 days away or 3 days away, whatever, from WrestleMania weekend. And like the whole thing of like a shared communal sports event celebration is like, there's nothing better than that. When everything's firing on all cylinders, it's awesome.
That's it. If you have a team to get behind, it's the best. And I think that's why I didn't watch club football for so long, because I never had that investment with a team. Like, I could get behind England, of course, I can. National side, all my friends together. We want them to win. Are we going to finally win something? Obviously, never do, but I never had that at club level. So I thought, well, I don't have an investment. It's kind of like watching wrestling without liking any of the wrestlers. So
yeah, that's true.
I've tried to claw a bit of that back. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple more, Scott, if we have time keep going. This is one, and I really don't know what you think about this. It's from Adam H., who says, Frasier and Friends both had their original runs around the same time. Which series is better and why? Also, do you know where my keys are? I don't, unfortunately, but I can tell you who's better between Friends and Frasier.
They're probably where you put them down when you first came in. They're probably still back on the table.
You probably put them somewhere strange, like in a shoe.
Maybe, yeah, where you'd least expect it. It's Friends by a landslide. I don't mind Frasier, but it's Friends. It's just Friends.
You know what? I'm going to agree with you, but I would have to think about it a little bit. I'm a big Frasier head.
I like Frasier a lot, yeah.
And both of them, like Adam was saying, grew up together with them both, but it's Friends.
Friends
too
was
to ignore.
Friends is exponentially bigger. Like, it was so influential. Like, whether it was everyone wanted to live like them, they influenced a whole generation of, like, what kind of apartments you were going to buy, what kind of relationship you wanted with your friends. Like, everyone wanted to be that group of friends. And that was just, but that's before you even get to the way those shows were written. Like, they were hilarious. The characters were great. That's proper once-in-a-lifetime group chemistry.
Absolutely.
And hardly any shows nail that now.
I think it's interesting that, you know, the likes of Friends crossed over to the UK to be a huge thing. Frasier crossed over. Even Everyone Loves Raymond and Home Improvement to a certain extent. But I always wonder,
my wife and kids,
why didn't Seinfeld have that same cultural crossover? Like, Seinfeld's like, is huge in America. Obviously, it's huge internationally as well, but it's much more of an American thing over here than something like Friends or Frasier, even though it was arguably bigger.
Seinfeld's like, I like Jerry Seinfeld. Like, I like his stand-up, and I like how like, pernickety he is. His whole thing is, like, having a problem with, like, a street sign and then doing 20 minutes on it. And it's so astute. And I love comedy so much, especially stand-up comedy and whatever. And, like, I get that he's a titan in his field. But I always found that Seinfeld, the TV show, was just a little bit too dry and a little bit too empty. Like, and people who like it and vibe with that sense of humor absolutely love it because there's nothing else like it.
Yeah.
But it was just less, like, mainstream in the UK. Like, we're quite a dry nation anyway.
Well, that's it. I always wondered why it didn't translate when, I think, like, the humor in it, like you said, it's drier, it's more mundane in a way.
Yeah.
To me, that's more British, you know?
It is. It's just, I don't know. It's like there's different approaches to, like, dry comedy. Like obviously, the history of, like, Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant with The Office and Extras. And, like, The Office is, like, the most dry you could get. But it was so perfect back then. And, like, those old shows are great. But, like, in America, you had, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm was almost, like, the American version of that style of comedy, like, the awkwardness side of it. And then, like, trying to do what Seinfeld was, obviously, Seinfeld predates that stuff, but like I said, it's I don't know, like, whenever I would watch Seinfeld, I haven't been back to it in a while, you would hear the audience would laugh and I would be like, what? What? That was the what? Where was what are we laughing at? Like, that's just two people talking in a room, like,
right?
Because it's more character based, and you kind of get, you have to be on board with, like, Seinfeld as a character and Kramer and whoever, to just find the scenarios hilarious,
yeah,
and be like, oh, it's a big deal that that guy is annoyed about this, right, or whatever. It's not structured in a way where, like, Friends, you could just put any episode on from the first, especially the first, well, the middle seasons,
yeah,
and you would get it. You get a full picture of that show. I think Seinfeld's more, you need more investment in it.
That's interesting. I've only ever seen a handful of Seinfeld episodes again because it didn't really translate over here, at least on telly. But I'm a big Curb fan, right. So I always think, well, if I like Curb, surely I like Seinfeld. Surely that has to happen. I always wonder if it didn't translate as well because it wasn't on Channel 4. Like, to people who don't live in the UK or maybe didn't even grow up when around the time we did, Channel 4 was responsible early morning for showing Frasier, for showing Everyone Loves Raymond, and then later on, I think it was Channel 4 that showed Friends. It was one of the main television channels, is the point. So, like, those shows were kind of all we had, you know, before streaming, before even the DVDs.
I wonder if another thing with Seinfeld is, like, the whole point of Jerry Seinfeld as a character, like, when he leans in, his kayfabe self is to be that, like, pernickety a-hole.
Yeah.
And so you're like, you need to be laughing along with him, or you're laughing that he's in those scenarios. But it, like I said, it's more of, like, a long-term investment as opposed to, like, an overall slapstick scenario that works on a first viewing. It's like, you need to come in knowing what kind of guy that is. It's like if your friend who you've known for a few years does something where it all goes sideways, oh my God, you laugh at that guy. But if you told someone about it, they wouldn't laugh.
That's interesting,
like,
yeah.
I find that's my interpretation of Seinfeld anyway.
If there are any American listeners listening to
this. We know there are. We hear you out there.
We know there's at least five of you. I'd be really interested to know which sort of seminal sitcoms or TV shows generally are huge over there that didn't translate and why. Why was it Friends? Why was it Frasier? And why wasn't it Seinfeld? Why wasn't it, I don't know, Days of Our Lives or something?
Yeah,
whatever.
It's true.
Hell it was. Scott Tilver, we got a few more. Reese Cow 13 asks, favorite animated film?
Akira. Mario movies up there. Love it. Recency bias.
Interesting.
Toy Story 1. Big fan.
Over Toy Story 2.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
I like Toy Story 2 a lot, but it's not 1.
Mm.
1 made me believe that the toys can come to life. 2 was like the dark middle chapter. I watch so much animated stuff that I'm almost blanking on it as it all tries to get through the door frame at once. I love Klaus, the Christmas film.
Oh, that was really, really good.
Yeah. And I love Klaus. And I'm just trying to think of the rest of the stuff. My mind goes to Akira. I love the Demon Slayer movie, but in itself it's just a part of their season that they released as a movie, the Mugen Train movie. But yeah, at the minute I'm in an anime mood. So it's like it's Perfect Blue, it's Akira, it's Suzume, like it's stuff like that.
I have such a major blind spot when it comes to animation. I've watched a lot, but if I'm thinking of my favorite ever, like nothing springs to mind. And if they do, it's quite basic.
I'm definitely not doing it, giving it its due, because it's one of my favorite art forms on the planet.
Yes.
But because of that, the wider you're invested in it, something, the harder it is to pick one thing out of it.
Yeah.
Because then you want to be able to say the thing that encapsulates everything. And I don't have that off the tip of my tongue. I loved the Mario movie last year, but that's not the best animated movie ever.
Right.
And then a lot of like the biggest strides in anime recently have been in TV. It's been Demon Slayer. It's been the Castlevania run on Netflix. Like all four seasons of that are unbelievable. And even if you only have 20 minutes to spare, just watch the pilot.
Yeah.
Season one, it's incredible. And things like Jujutsu Kaisen, or like there's a lot in the anime realm, but it's on TV. The Cowboy Bebop movie, that like that takes place in the middle of the show, but like it works by itself.
Yeah.
Like there are things I can shout out. I feel like there's something that I should be holding up. I'm just gonna say Akira because I effing love Akira.
No, that's cool, man. Like I have to go, I'm going very normie with it. Mine are probably the ones that I grew up with. Toy Story 2, A Bug's Life, I think genuinely is banging. Like that does not get its due when it comes to Pixar movies. But again, I'm going to be a normie and probably say Kiki's Delivery Service.
Oh, what a
like
pick.
5-star. Absolutely incredible.
Watch Akira, mate.
I really want to. No, that's one that's been on the list where I just think, I'll love you.
Yeah.
You know, every frame I see from it,
dude,
I think it's spectacular.
You can probably get it on some digital service, but I've got the 4K one. It's a beautiful film.
I might treat myself to that this weekend because I'm in the mood for it. You know,
it's so high frame rate as well. Like the whole thing with that movie was that like it was laboriously hand animated.
Yes.
And every frame is loaded. Like that. Oh, dude.
Where does Final Fantasy Spirits Within rank?
Higher than I thought it would. when I went back and actually watched that, because I didn't watch it when it first came out. I watched that in my Final Fantasy bubble of last year, alongside 16 in the Final Fantasy Cafe and going to see the Final Fantasy Orchestra and everything else. And I thought it was pretty good. A lot of the through line thematics of Final Fantasy, environmentalism, humanism, taking care of the planet, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Big fan.
It works.
Yeah.
We've got two more, Scott.
One is
on books from Peter B, who says, what's your favorite series that you've ever read? I've been reading Drizzt. Sorry if that's wrong. I've never heard of that, actually.
I've heard of Drizzt. That was got a dash.
So it's got to be those for me. I'm not entirely sure.
Drizzt-D.
It was just D-R-I-Z-Z-T.
I literally don't put the time into reading.
Did you never read, like, mangas or graphic novels or anything like that?
Tons of comics. Graphic novels and stuff. I actually love Garth Ennis' run on The Punisher. There's, like, a 10-volume run. 10th volume, I think, was handled by Matt Fraction. I think it's a 9-volume run. If I bring in graphic novel stuff, then there's a lot there. Like, there's all the, like, certain Batman stuff, like Death in the Family, Death of the Family, I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Just how dark and twisted that is. Love the Punisher's, Garth Ennis' run on the Punisher, though. Just lots of great comments on veterans and the usability of a soldier and what the hell are you supposed to do with those skills once you've served your country or whatever, and, like, how dark that run is.
Yeah.
And then the 9th volume in that run is called Valley Forge, which is like half a story set in, I think it's Vietnam. And then half of the book, every other page is like a letter that was like from a soldier, like written obviously by Garth Ennis, but like as if they were someone just wanting to get home and struggling through it. And there's so much commentary in the way America treats its soldiers in that whole run.
That sounds really interesting.
I haven't read since when it used to actually come out, like across the sort of late 2000s. But I love that thing. And it's so gory. Like I used to love how over the top and ridiculous it was. If you look at John Bernthal's take on The Punisher, it's pulling
similar.
A lot from the Max run, which is Garth Ennis' run.
When it comes to like actual books, I don't think I've ever read a series. I normally go for an author and kind of go through all of their work, kind of bubble it like I do with franchises. I kind of treat authors as their own series of franchises.
Right.
So I've read like all the Bret Easton Ellis books and love a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. So I'll jump in to read the two Eliza Clarke books or all the Sally Rooney books or whatever it is. That's kind of how I go, rather than going for a big sort of fantasy or sci-fi series. Mm-hmm. Like I'll probably never read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but I will read The Hobbit.
I did love The Hobbit. I'll also shout out Thomas Gibson's Neuromancer, which I didn't get to for so long, but I love Cyberpunk so much. And then when I went back through Cyberpunk and then I played Phantom Liberty, I was like, I need to get into like the roots of this entire genre. So I was reading Thomas Gibson's Neuromancer, but that thing is, oh God, some of the descriptions and some of the ways that he tackles like depicting those spaces, like unbelievable.
I think
so good.
For graphic novels and comics, it's Ultimate Spider-Man was the kind of the comic run that got me into weekly or monthly comics, where I was like reading it all the time, and I just loved it as a complete package from the first issue, probably right up until the death of Spider-Man, and then the initial introduction of Miles Morales. I thought was wonky, but once they actually find that character's footing and he kind of becomes his own person, then the Miles Morales run is excellent. It's just it's a naturally so perhaps rocky transition where they're trying to figure out who this Spider-Man is, how we can differentiate him power-wise and storyline-wise from Peter Parker. And I didn't necessarily like when Miles, I think when he debuted in Ultimate Spider-Man, he's 13. And when I was reading it, that was too young for me. I wanted a slightly older Spider-Man. I couldn't relate as an 18-year-old to a 30-year-old.
Yeah, well, there's
anymore.
A big gap there when you grow up.
Absolutely. So as soon as they aged Miles up a little bit to 15, I was like, you're my Spider-Man.
This is my Spider-Man.
This is incredible.
I'll shout out some, but just some Batman stuff. Like, I love Hush. Like a lot of people don't like Hush, but I really, really like that thing. I also want to shout out Punk Rock Jesus, which is one of the first comics that I got into because my wife gave it to me when we first met. And I forget the name of the dude that wrote that, Scott someone. But Punk Rock Jesus is just about like what if Jesus came back, but he was into metal,
right?
And or into punk. And
God, that sounds like something right up your street.
It's great, and it's just everyone worships him for all those twisted reasons, and it's really funny.
Does he look like Johnny Silverhand in Cyberpunk?
He kind of looks like an SSX Tricky character.
Oh, nice.
Like just sort of like big gangly dude with his big spiky hair. But the artwork in that thing is awesome. Yeah, Punk Rock Jesus rules.
I think the last one I'd shout out is a comic series called Snot Girl, written by... I know, it's a very mean one, isn't it? Written by Brian Lee O'Malley, who did Scott Pilgrim and Seconds, and I think it's Lost at Sea. That is one he did. Where it's like a monthly comic, so it's like an ongoing series, and even more than Scott Pilgrim. It was really good, really enjoyed it. Last question, Scott,
bring it.
And we can go home and you can go have a child. from Andy Ems, who says, I'm currently planning a trip to Japan next year, so any must-see places from Scott, and to finish, again from Andy Ems, top 5 biscuits, and which biscuit has absolute goat status?
It depends where he's going in Japan for that top question, because I did Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka. If you're going to Osaka, just eat everything, like it's literally the kitchen of Japan. But if you're going to Tokyo, look up any, they're called izakayas, they're like really small bars, which are just like small little 2-3 stool bars. The whole point of it is that a person will be the barmaid, the barkeep, whatever, and they'll have curated the drinks that are available that night. Maybe it's only like 3 or 4 drinks, but they're all good in little clusters. There's an area in the middle of Tokyo called Golden Guy. It's in the Yakuza games. You can go to this Golden Guy area, and it's like if you imagine like a grid with like all these like small little bars dotted throughout it, and you kind of just have a night on Golden Guy where you just go to all these small places, and each little tiny little izakaya specializes in a different thing. Like you might find one that's the person's going, I'm going to curate you guys 5 wines tonight, or sake, or whatever it is. And it's just a nice little thing, and you're kind of encouraged to talk because you're in really close proximity. These are tiny little bars. We met a lot of other people who were either on holiday or were just in Tokyo anyway. Shout out to the dude that I talked to who was a Rocket League esports champion.
Hell yeah.
He was on a date with this girl who didn't know he was an esports champion, and when I said I was into video games, he was like, oh, I'm actually this esports guy.
Was it Osley Beatty by chance?
It sadly was not Osley Beatty, but he then produced a photo of himself to prove he was this sports champion, and she freaked out, and clearly we made them fall in love. So that was very, very nice. But yeah, Golden Guy is awesome in Tokyo. There's a million things, man, for all that stuff. I just love the culture. The main thing, if you're going to Japan, is like learn the basics of the language, because anyone who is Japanese massively appreciates that, and you'll distinguish yourself from the people who are just yelling and pointing at things and hoping for the best. Just simple things, please, thank you, one of these, two of these, whatever it is, if you're ordering something, and thank you very much, and all that kind of stuff. It's just nice to be nice, and I think because like it is such a visited country, and because foreigners have such a perception that it's like it's nice to at least meet them in the middle and at least say thank you very much and whatever. So it's a super simple thing, but like if you have the time, depending on when he's going to Japan, I would recommend the basic Duolingo stuff. Like you can do the free version, which gets you all the written stuff. It'll help you with reading signage, and it'll help you with menus and stuff. So just eat everything, eat stuff, and I mean, if you can, go to Mount Fuji. Like that was life defining.
Your photos from that looked incredible. Even just being on the bullet train. Was it bullet train?
Bullet train as well, dude. Bullet train's awesome. The ekiben, which is the specific lunches you get for the bullet train, they're incredible. Just eat everything. The food's phenomenal.
But not the Nintendo world.
Well, good. Nintendo World's awesome. Just, yeah. Oh, God, it's the booking for that. The thing with that was we got stuck wasting 8 hours to get into Nintendo World. When we were in, it was the best thing ever, but right. Killing 8 hours because they didn't let you pick your time early enough was an esser.
Well, Scott, final question. Top five biscuits. Come on. What's got goat at stairs?
I've got to go with a digestive. I think I get the Mario. It's the Mario of biscuits, but I think that if I'm Dunkin' Biscuits, sometimes I just can't be a standard milk chocolate topped digestive.
All right.
That might be my default number one, and then I guess I would get more frilly after that.
For a second, I thought you were going to go, and I would have appreciated it. Just like plain digestive.
I like them too, if they're in that red packet.
Yeah.
But I told you about my biscuit snap routine. If I'm Dunkin' Biscuits, I'm snapping and putting them both in together.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No, it's not. You want to you think of it as a circle. You snap it, you put those two half moons together, you line up the flat edge, you dunk both of those bad boys together.
Please don't pass that on to the next generation.
No, every
that
single
has
person.
To die with you.
No. Every single person, try that right now. I'm so right. I'm not even backing down for a millisecond. That is the better way to try a dunked biscuit. Most countries don't even do dunk biscuits.
Do they not?
So we're passing it on.
I suppose we're such a tea nation that, you know, we kind of, we are born, and you'll find this out very soon enough, born with a cup of tea in one hand.
Born into tea.
And a custard cream in the other, I think. Custard cream for me is the...
Custard creams and bourbons.
Yeah, custard cream, bourbons. I love a dark chocolate digestive.
I can't get away with dark chocolate for as much as my palate is more towards coffee. I'm not a big fan of the old dark chocolate. But things like a Blue Ribboned. Like,
oh, sensational.
Sometimes pretty good.
Kit Kat, all of it at once. No.
You're eating Kit Kats like a psychopath. You're eating all four strands at once.
Psychopaths have a lot of fun, my friend.
It's not legal fun. They're supposed to get up in your own bed the next morning, not the jail cell. I don't know. I definitely got to go. If I was just going to pick one. Yeah. The homeliness of the milk chocolate digestive.
I think that's
simple, effective.
Simple, effective. I've eaten so many. Cream. I'm gonna you know, twist it. I'm gonna dunk it. I'm gonna put it in.
You're twisting the custard cream.
Yeah, of course.
What do you mean?
Well, you twist it and then
that's an Oreo technique.
Yeah, but
I don't even agree with it then.
Custard creams came first in the UK, probably. I don't know.
I think they did, but I don't remember anyone twisting a custard cream.
You can't go wrong. 45p. They're twistable. You don't need to twist
them. I'm not even going to lie. Every time I've tried to twist a biscuit, it's just falling apart.
Is it?
Yeah. There's no axis.
You've got a lot of strength about you, though. You know, maybe you don't have the finesse to get
I need
it
to
out.
Gently do it like I'm picking a lock. yeah, I just need to move it until I find the sweet spot. Catch it on the bite.
Well, Scott, on that note, we're going to have to finish up because we have gone for absolutely ages.
That's what we do.
I need a drink and some food after this. But it's been a pleasure, as always. Thank you for indulging this. And thanks to everyone who sent in questions. There were so many that we did not get around to that hopefully we will save and bank for later podcasts. Some great gaming ones, some great food ones, some great everything. You've been absolutely sensational. And thank you so much for listening and indulging.
Brother, thank you very much for putting all this together. And like you said, massive thank you to everybody for sending in your various questions. We'll do more of this stuff. I was thinking that we'll have the UBP at some point as well.
Yeah.
But my mind's all over the place in regards to how these things are going to be going out. So just enjoy what we've got, and we might do another one of these soon enough in the future.
Hope so.
For now, this has been the Wind Up Podcast.
It has.
And we'll catch you very soon.
Let's go home, man. Let's go home.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.